I'd like to welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. I have not done. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting on the step discussed tonight. So we usually like to say before we start, we're not here to teach. We're just here to share experience, strength, and hope on the step that we're talking about tonight, which is step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So I'm going to read, this is a rather long paragraph. We're not here to read you to death, I promise. There's actually several paragraphs on step two, and then I'm going to turn it over to Ryan to share. So this is from page 45. Of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we've made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels he is an atheist or an agnostic, such an experience seems impossible, but to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he's an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. But it isn't so difficult. About half of our original fellowship were exactly of that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it's going to be that way with you. But cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostic. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us. No matter how much we tried, we could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power was not there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how do we find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to help you, is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. You want to try that one, or you want to try this one? I'm going to turn this one down.
All right. I've never spoken into a microphone before, so let's see how this goes. Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Okay.
I got sober on October 24th in 2009. And what I can find interesting is that a lot of times in like AA, God is like a controversial topic, which I kind of find funny because it was the spirituality in this program that actually saved my life. This would not have, if I could have found a way to like avoid spirituality and get sober, I certainly would have done it. AA was not my first pick. God certainly was not my first pick. I kind of wanted nothing to do with any of that. But I found myself in a position where I just couldn't quit drinking. I drank when it made absolutely no sense for me to drink. I remember I hear people talk about bottoms in AA a lot of times, and I'm the kind of person that bottoms confuse me. I think I hit my bottom after waking up, like after passing out. And I wake up and my husband has left me a note that he's leaving, which is probably the most horrible thing that you could have done to me. And my first thought that next morning was not, wow, I need to go back and get that guy that I love. My first thought was, where's the bottle of vodka? You know, that's the kind of insanity that was going on in my head. And I went kind of on an escapade to quit without using spirituality. I know a lot of people that have used like foxhole prayers to like get out of trouble. And I was like so not with it that that didn't even occur to me to like pray for help. You know, I'm more of like, I can do this on my own. Thank you very much. Or let me visit this nice doctor. I watched Intervention for a lot of time. I like to get drunk on Friday nights and watch Intervention. So when the stuff really hit the ceiling, my first thought was I need to go to rehab. And when I got to rehab, they handed me the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was actually there because I wanted to quit. So I did something really weird, which apparently not a lot of people do. I read the book, and it started to introduce this idea of spirituality to me. And if I had not been so screwed, I probably would have like put the book down and pushed it away, especially when I started to come to your meetings, because you guys would like sit in a circle and you would talk about God, and I thought it was so, so weird. I don't know people that do that on a regular basis. But it got me thinking about the God thing. I was faced with these things, this idea that I must find a spiritual basis or else. And I didn't do that right away, because I did come to AA and you guys started to talk about spiritual stuff like patience and tolerance and honesty and things like that, and all these morals that this talks about, the a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life. I like started to absorb some of that stuff. And I liked what I heard. I didn't have a problem with it. I also worked at a bookstore where there's like these huge like self-help section and spirituality section, and I would like buy those books and I would like read bits and pieces of them, you know. What's the big one? They've had Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. Like, you know, I'm starting to get some of this stuff. And what I can tell you is that those good ideas did not prevent me from drinking again. It's just not enough. When I try to quit by myself or quit without this idea of something bigger than me, it just doesn't work. And I drank for, I don't know, about 10 months. I know people go in and out for years, but 10 months I think I struggled with this whole God thing back and forth. And then I came to that position where I realized I have got to find out about this stuff, or you know, this is how it's going to be for the rest of my life. I'm going to drink until I'm going to die, and it's going to suck, is basically what it came down for me. And one of the things that I love about We Agnostics is I know a lot of people that come in here and we, like, struggle with the God thing. And one of the things in here that always has relieved me is where it says that about half the people come in here in the same boat. Because it's always funny. It's like you're sitting there and you're talking to someone and it's like, wow, you are totally and completely screwed unless you find God. And if you're like an atheist or an agnostic like me, and you're like, oh, wow, I'm double screwed because I can't believe that crap. But a lot of people do walk in here that way, and it doesn't stop it from working, which is a relief. So that's all I got right now.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Danny Shirley.
Hey, Danny.
And my sobriety date is September 3rd, 1995. And I'm a member of the Craddock Study Group. We meet at 8 o'clock on Saturday over in downtown Craddock, or 7:30 on Sunday. So if you're ever over that way, come see us. I came from a very religious family, so I always had a concept of God and always believed in God. But that's all I did was believe in God, and I'll talk more about that later. But when I came here this time, this isn't my first go around in AA, but I hope it's my last. I was here early in the early 70s at the wish of my father. And the only reason I came here was to get him off my back, to make him think Danny was fixing Danny. And of course, I have since found out that Danny can't do that, and I need God's help. But anyway, I came to meetings. I continued to drink. I'd go to meetings and then go out at 9 o'clock or whenever I got into a meeting and do some controlled drinking. And it seemed to work for a while, and you know, I was saving some money, wasn't getting arrested anymore. But then when my dad died, I quit coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. My first sponsor, some of y'all know her, Ann N. I didn't realize she was my sponsor at the time. Not that I utilized her sponsorship, but she came to see me, actually picked me up and take me to a meeting a couple of days after my dad died. And my dad, he worked in the shipyard, and he also had his own business, and he would stay there until late at night taking care of that. And when she came in to see me, I used that excuse. I said, well, you know, Ann, my dad's dead, but I know he would want me to stay here and, you know, do the business thing like he used to do rather than go to an AA meeting. And she just kind of shook her head, and she just said, well, let me tell you one thing. She said, I have planted the seed, and I hope and pray that one day you'll let God let it grow. And when she turned to walk out, I said, that woman is nuts. What's she talking about, planting a seed? I don't see no farm here, you know? But anyway, so I continued to drink for 20 more years. And there was one thing that she told me. It was a lot of things that she told me I heard, but I didn't do anything about. But there was one thing that used to always ring in my ears whenever I found myself in trouble again because drinking wasn't going right or y'all weren't behaving or the cops were misbehaving, whatever the case may have been. But she said, you know, once you get a belly full of AA, your drinking's messed up forever, and that was the case. But 20 years later down the road, I'm in trouble again. I mean, looking at going to prison, and so I need something good on my resume when I go to court. So I seek some psychiatric help. This will make it look like Danny's fixing Danny. I went to this doctor. She just said, tell me why you're here. And so I told her about my alcoholism for about 45 minutes. And then she put her hand up. She said, okay, we're done for the day. She said, we're done. And I said, so I just see the receptionist on my way out and make my next appointment. She said, there won't be any next appointment. I said, what do you mean? I got 5 free substance abuse counseling sessions. And she said, I can't help you. And when she told me that, my jaw dropped because I got to go to court in 2 days. She said, from what you tell me, you're alcoholic. And she said the exact words there. She said, you're suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. And when she told me that, I knew where she was going with that. And then I said, there's got to be something else. She said, well, there's Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, no, there's got to be something else. And she said, well, there's intensive outpatient care. I said, give me the name. I'll go there. So I went there, told the doctor my story, and he said, we can help you. And I said, see, I knew that lady was nuts. So he said, but we have a few conditions. So he said I had to go to AA. But he went a little further. He said, you got to get a sponsor and a home group. And I'm like, what the heck's all that stuff? You know, should have known. And I'm sure told me what all that stuff was. So anyway, I went to some meetings. I was going to some AA meetings because I got to go to court, right? I'm in trouble. And about the third group session, the guy asked me, he said, so where's your home group? And I didn't have one because I hadn't been to, no, that's right, I hadn't been to any AA meetings yet. He said, where's your home group? And I'm like, how do I answer this question? Because he's going to kick me out if I tell him I ain't got one. And so, but God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself, I told the truth. Probably the first time I'd ever told the truth in my life. I said, I don't have a home group. And he said, well, if you want us to help you, then you have to have a home group before you come back here. If you don't get a home group, don't come back. Well, I got to come back. You know, I got to go to court. So I called the AA hotline hoping y'all were out of business. But you weren't. Some guy answered, Big John. He said, go to Craddock Study Group tonight and ask for a guy named Dell. So I did that. And Dell talked to me after the meeting, and he became my sponsor. You know, the reason I didn't want to come to Alcoholics Anonymous is because y'all were going to talk about God, and I was going to have to stop drinking forever. And I couldn't fathom a life without drinking forever and talking about God all the time. Just, you know, so, anyway, because, see, I knew more about God than you did. The store that my dad had was a Christian bookstore. I worked there for 10 or 15 years. I dealt with a lot of religious people. I came from a very religious background. But you see, God never worked for me. Every time I would ask him to do something, it seemed like things would go good for a little while, and then they'd fall back apart. That was God's fault, not my fault. And, you know, in the end of my drinking, I got so sick and thought I was so powerful that I could con God. You know, all my prayers were, God, let's make a deal. And when I was praying, I was saying, God, if you do this, I'll do this. We're going to make a deal here. Knowing in the back of my mind that I'm going to renege. As soon as he does his part, I'm off the hook. I mean, that's how sick I was. And so I didn't see where you could help me with this God thing. So I just need to learn how to drink like other people. And because, I mean, before I came this time, I had gone almost 2 years without drinking. But the thought of having a beer came to me one day to relieve what I didn't know was being restless, irritable, and discontent. And so I drank that one beer, went into a blackout. Case and a half later, I come out and, you know, realized what had happened. And I said, what's the sense? You know, just keep on drinking. But anyway, I was coming to Alcoholics Anonymous for about 45 more days before I finally stopped drinking. And we had done the first step. Well, I did the first step out on Barstool, but we had talked about the second step. And I said, I don't have any problem with that. I believe in God. And we had done the third step, but my sponsor used to ask me every night, well, if we did the third step, why do you keep taking it back? And he said, because you want to keep controlling your life. You know, you're not doing anything to turn it over to God, but it was just the best I could do at the time. And, you know, all my life, I had done all these things. You know, you talk about morals or better philosophy. I had done all these things to try to get sober. I think I was even saved 6 or 7 times. But see, I never did my part. You know, it was more of a fan show. You know, look, see what Danny's doing, you know. And it wasn't until my sponsor told me to pray for 2 individuals that were on my hit list. And that was my wife and my mother-in-law. We each hated each other with a passion. I think we would have probably killed each other had we had the opportunity. But he suggested that I pray for them. And if I didn't, I might get drunk over it because I had great resentments. And, you know, because he said, you're still trying to control the world. But I see, I thought I had that much power. I thought I could make these people do what I wanted them to do. But a few nights later, I came to the realization that lack of power was my dilemma. And I got down on my knees and I prayed exactly what the guy told me to pray for, is their health, happiness, prosperity, and God's will in their lives and in His way and in His time. And almost immediately they changed, or at least I thought they did. It was my perception of them that it changed. But I saw the power of God working in my life because I had finally allowed it to happen. And so I had realized that, you know, I was not powerful or had any power over anything. So I think that's all I got on this for right now.
All right. Thanks, Danny. Okay, we're going to pick up on page 46. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with Him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek Him. To us, the realm of the Spirit is broad, roomy, and all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. Right?
We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible. Another's conception of God, that's where I usually get my information on God. I had a little bit of church when I was younger. My mom liked to make us go every now and again. She was very on again, off again. When I was 13, I stopped going because it was boring. But that's usually where I get my conception of God. Every now and again, I watch movies that have to do with spirituality. My favorite one was the movie Stigmata, which, I don't know, some people might not get that spiritual jive from it, but I did. And I would like watch that movie, and then the credits would roll, and I wouldn't worry about it. But usually I get all these other people's input in my life about what God should and shouldn't be. And, you know, I started to get results from this program as soon as I started to consider this stuff. I didn't get sober right away, but I remember reading this book and starting to think about it, and I like to play the battle in my head where I have to, like, define God, which is interesting because, like, how can you do that? I don't really know, but I'm smart enough and I'm going to figure it out. And I spent a lot of time doing that. It was like this battle. It's like God's like this big mean guy in the sky who's out to get me. No, he's this nice guy, but then why did he do this? No, he really is a mean guy. And I know even as a kid, I was suicidal by the time I hit high school. So, like, I had a little bit of prejudice against God because, like, why are you creating all these beings just to leave them in, like, pain and misery, you know? And I got a lot of input from the outside world and my old ideas. But when I first got presented with this, my mind did become open, and I stayed sober for 4 months. I remember getting out of that first rehab and being terrified because I was going to have to go to a grocery store. I hear people talking about, like, avoid people, places, and things. That's not possible for me as an alcoholic. Like, the 7-Eleven down the street or the gas station down the street, that's my favorite place to get booze. So I can't really avoid this stuff. And I remember being terrified. And finally, I'm just, like, fed up with, like, thinking about what God is or isn't. And I'm, like, sitting out on my back porch. And I'm just like, okay, God, I give up. Help me out here. You know, and all of a sudden, a peace came out of, like, my mind just shut up, and I was calm for, like, days, which was weird because I was leaving the life that I had to move back to Virginia. I was facing a lot of intense stuff. I kind of got away from that. You know, I got into a lot of things that had nothing to do with God when I got back to Virginia, and I ended up drinking again. But I have found that whenever I lay aside that prejudice and start to believe and keep my mind open, stuff happens. You know, all the pressure eases. And I think that's all I got on that. Oh, wait a minute. I will say this. I just caught this lovely little sentence in here. It says that we will be possessed by a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. That's the part that I admitted once I opened my mind to that. I was a girl. I came to AA, and I did a lot of the things that I hear people doing, talking about. They told me to go to lots and lots of meetings. So that's exactly what I did. 90 and 90 is big. I'm lazy, so I would go to meetings 6 days a week, and I would take Sundays off. And I knew that there was like these steps on the wall, and I kind of figured, I don't know, that like somebody would get around to like telling me when to do them. So I didn't worry about them too much. So I didn't follow that. I didn't take the other simple steps that are necessary for me to stay sober. And all that worldly clamor, all that crap, for me, it just comes back. You know, I drink again. That's why I'm such a big God person in this book, because a lot of the things that I hear people say sometimes, I tried it, you know. Go to a lot of meetings, not happening for me. I'll stay sober for a little bit, but I'm going to succumb to that. It wasn't until I took those other simple steps, and they're referring to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I actually got and stayed sober. You know, I can find these contacts and these connections with God because it started happening prior to taking the steps. But if I don't continue to move forward, I always drink again. I mean, that's just who I am. I always think of it like walking around with a ticking time bomb. You know, it's set. Not quite sure what it's set for. You know, maybe I'm going to get 24 hours. I got 4 months once. But at some point, that sucker is going to go off on me without the rest of the stuff. Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan. As I mentioned, I came from a very religious family, so it was expected of me. I was never told I had to, but it was expected that I go to church in a Sunday school every Sunday, and I did that until I was like 18 years old, and then I was gone. And I don't have anything against church. I go occasionally today. I don't make a regular practice of it, but like I said, it's nothing against the church, because my relationship with God is right here, right now, no matter where I'm at. I can turn to God for help, and I do a lot because I need help. That was another thing I meant to mention when we first started this. You know, the second step is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Well, for me, I had to come to the conclusion that I was insane and that I needed this help. Because in the beginning, I just thought, you know, this was just all a bunch of garbage and I didn't really need any of it. I was going to figure it all out. And of course, the main deal was keep me from going to prison, and I'm off the hook anyway. So, but what I wanted to say about church and religion, and not that this is a religious program, it's a spiritual program, but my definition of that, I guess, is I grew up being taught someone else's conception of God. Not that that was wrong. It just wasn't personal to me. And I really couldn't relate to it, probably because I didn't try, number one. But two, you know, I wasn't ready yet. But, you know, after I said that prayer that I mentioned earlier and saw that God could and would work in my life if he was sought, then things started changing. Of course, at that time, too, I started working the steps, because before that I wasn't doing anything. Or, you know, I hate to say working the steps, because it's just been my experience for myself, because I worked on my third step for 3.5 years. So when people tell me to work on the steps, that means they're really not doing anything. But when I take the steps and take the action, you know, then I'm doing something. So I finally started taking the action as required in the steps, and it was just like the dam had opened, you know. I mean, just the floodwaters came in and life was different. But So I developed this relationship with a God that I could go to at any time. And, you know, it was something that, you know, I could relate to, and didn't have to do it anybody else's way. You know, because, you know, when I grew up, You prayed at all your meals. You prayed before you went to bed. You went to church on Sunday. But now it's like I just pray whenever I need to or whenever I'm supposed to. You know, that's the first thing I do when I get up in the morning is hit my knees, because I know if I don't, then trouble's apt to sneak in the door and I'm not ready for it. You know, doesn't mean that I don't take my will back somewhere during the day, but then I can always start it over at any time. So I'm glad that that they came up with the fact, you know, guide of my understanding, because otherwise I might not have been able to understand him, because I just never did before. But maybe it was just an act of desperation, because I know that morning that I said that prayer, I asked myself, because I told my sponsor he was absolutely crazy, and I didn't use that nice of words, but I asked myself that morning, you know, what have I got to lose? It's got to be better than me trying to control this thing, because it's not working. I don't have the power. If I did, it would be taken care of. So what have I got to lose? So I just did it. You know, and of course, I've heard some people say, just do it whether you believe it or not. Just do it. And so I did. And it was the funny thing about that was, it wasn't so funny now. I thought it was very supernatural and odd, but I went to my meeting that night, because I used to sit outside and whine and moan to my sponsor every night for half an hour or more about my wife and mother-in-law. He would be saying all this big book stuff, and it was going over my head, and I said, you just got to hear what I'm saying. But that night when I went to the meeting, after the meeting, we were sitting outside talking for about half an hour, 45 minutes. He looked at me and said, you did it. I said, I did what? He said, you prayed for him. And right now I'm like, how does this guy know? what's going on here? And I said, how do you know that? And he said, because you haven't mentioned their name the whole time we've been out here. And I said, man. And that's when I realized that the power of God was working in me, because I had let go of that and actually turned it over to God, just like he told me it was going to happen. And so that helped me on my road of building this conception of God, because my relationship with God today is much different than it was on that day. Usually I try to give him all of my life instead of just that much of it. But, it's amazing how he'll work in your life if you seek him. I believe God can help anybody, or will help anybody, that cannot help themselves. Cannot. But he can't help those who stand in the way, and I did that forever. Thanks.
Thanks, Danny. We're going to pick up on the middle of page 47 in a paragraph that's personally very important to me. Made a big difference. It just simply says, we needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe, or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him he is well on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. Right?
You know, you just read that, but there's a paragraph I think that we don't read that applies more to me, and it kind of happened for me before I could even look at being willing to believe. It's on page 53 in the middle, and it says, when we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? And I had to really fully get to that place before I could open my mind to this belief or even a willingness to believe. I don't know. I've had a lot of crises in my life. Problems at school, problems at work, getting arrested, whatever it was, but I've always been able to figure a way out of it. You know, when the drinking got bad, the first thing that happened to me was I lost my job because I couldn't show up like sober and clean and all those kinds of things. And I had a way out of that. I could go to school. When my marriage ended, I had a way out of that. You know, I could go live with my mother, you know. When the drinking got bad, I had a way out of that. I just go to rehab and get myself some nice, like, antidepressants and things like that. You know, but it was after, like, trying all those things and continuing to drink that I really became willing to believe in this kind of stuff. I remember it was shortly before I got sober, and I hate to get, like, all depressing on you guys, but that's just the reality of it. I was still drinking. I was living with my mother at that point, and she's given me 2 weeks to get out of the house because even she's sick of me. And so I want to go to the store to buy a pack of cigarettes, and she doesn't trust me to go to the store by myself because I'm a sneaky little girl. And if you give me 10 minutes by myself, I drink. And she pulled the car over when we were on our way out there, and she says, "Ryan, do you even want to quit drinking?" And that was like a baffling question to me, because I really, really wanted to stop. I had been trying very hard to stop. But more than anything, I just wanted to go to the store and buy some booze. You know, what came out of my mouth instead was, "I just want to die," you know? And I got home and there was a scene and cops were called, and she's like begging me to go back to rehab. And I refused because I had been twice in the span of 8 months. You know, rehab didn't work for me. And I remember getting out of that incident just thinking to myself, like, this is how it's going to be for the rest of my life. The idea of death didn't particularly bother me. What horrified me was that I was probably going to live another 60 years of that life, and there wasn't anything that I could do about it because I had tried everything that I could think of. You know, I had done exercising. My therapist suggested that, you know, and I can tell you what that looked like. That looked like me getting home from school, and I would walk around the block once or twice, and all like the insanity in my head went from a 10 down to an 8, and I drank again. You know, I had done some really weird stuff. I put like post-it notes throughout my house, like as little reminders not to drink. I had done the traditional things. I had gone to doctors. I had gone to rehab. I had done a lot of the things that they talk about in AA. You know, my first, when I got to AA, I didn't know what it was. I thought you just like showed up here and somehow you magically got sober. So I had gone to a lot of meetings, and that did not get me sober. And then I heard you guys like talking about sponsorship, and I was absolutely convinced that if I just got a sponsor that I would somehow get sober. So I got myself like one of these tough talking sponsors that was like, "You're going to call me every day at 5:30. And you're going to be at my house on this day at this time, and we're going to read this book." And that got me sober for 2 months, you know. And I just knew that I was going to drink. That's it. This is it for me, you know. And that self-imposed crisis where I absolutely realized, like, this is it, is really what got me to this coming to believe. And I didn't believe. I didn't. I did not walk into these rooms, listen to you guys talk about God and 12 steps, and believe this stuff, you know? And what a relief that it wasn't required of me, you know? I came back, what happened that day is after I started thinking about, well, I'm just screwed, I was thinking, wow, I need to go back and try this God stuff. I need to go back and try the 12 steps, you know? And 5 days later, it took me a little bit, you know? I struggled a little bit. I came back and I'm like calling this woman that I have been talking to. She's the first person I ever heard talk about alcoholism in a real way. She wasn't talking about spiritual stuff. She was like talking about drinking and getting effed up and like doing really stupid, bad, horrible things. And I totally related to her. And I called her up, and I remember she said that if there's 5 things you do in a day, you're probably going to stay sober that day. She says, pray in the morning, right? Let's try some God stuff. Read the big book. Call another alcoholic. Go to a meeting and pray at night. And that's what I set out to do like 5 days after that happened. And what happened to me was I didn't get sober the first time I tried it. I didn't. I woke up that morning and I prayed. You know, I didn't know what I was praying to. I really don't care. You know, when we talk about you don't have to believe, like, you don't have to believe. You don't even have to know. Like, I had absolutely no idea. It didn't even matter. You could have told me to, like, pray to this cup, and I would have been okay with it. But I did that, and I read the big book, and I called her up, And I called her up and I was like, I'm finally willing to go to any lengths. And she takes me to a meeting. And that was really, you know, I was just open to this idea of God. I see a lot of people struggle with it. Like, we have to define it and we have to figure it out. We don't. And I can't always do faith in God. I love what Graham, I'm going to call you out a little bit, I'm sorry. I love what Graham says is that this is a program of simple actions and that if we do them, we'll get sober. Because I can't always do God. Like, I got God issues. Even to this day, 3 years in, sometimes that word does not jive with me. But I can always rely on those simple actions and on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is something tangible for me that I can do. And it's gotten and kept me sober. And that really is enough. Whenever I read this, all I think, God, we make it so complicated. It's like, do you think it's possible? You know, that's it. Is it possible? You know, doesn't tell you what to believe in or any of that jazz. But anyhow, I'm done rambling. I'm sorry.
Thanks, Ryan.
like I said, when I came here, I didn't really have any problem believing in God. But the part I was missing was that I thought that God was a power greater than myself. Because I didn't think that when I got here. I thought that I could manage my life very well if you would just behave yourself, everything would be okay. And I mean, I really thought that. I mean, y'all were just the worst bunch of people I ever met in my life. As soon as you walked in the door, I had you condemned. You weren't any good. You weren't going to be able to meet up to my expectations. And I was better than you. And would always be better than you. There was no hope for you. I mean, that's how critical and condemning I was. So I was a pretty powerful guy. I mean, you are pretty powerful if you think you can con God in your prayers. You know, come on. you know, the difference today when I pray is, you know, it was always let's make a deal. And today when I pray is, what is the deal? You know, what would you have me do, God, and to, you know, help others and not always see what I can get out of life. But so the problem for me was this power greater than myself. And, you know, when I first hooked up with a sponsor, of course, the only reason I got him to start with is because I had to. And, you know, because that was part of the requirements of the treatment that I was going to. And but then I saw this guy that he could help me stay out of trouble and learn not to drink so much. That's what I thought. And because I apparently wasn't listening to anything he was saying. But, but you know, then there came a time that he was going to move away, and he said, you need to find yourself a new sponsor. And I said, why? And I said, I got free long distance. And he said, you need somebody that can watch your feet. I said, watch my feet? Here's one of them corny sayings, I planted a seed, you know. So I said, watch my feet. He said, yeah, somebody to make sure you're doing what you're saying, you know. So anyway, well, I didn't follow his suggestion because he moved away, and for the next 2 years, I sponsored myself. And, it's only by the grace of God and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous that I didn't take a drink during that time. Because I can tell you, sponsoring yourself is worse than drinking. It is. But that's how powerful I thought it was. I mean, I would go to meetings and I would listen to some of these people talking about God and how great their life was. And they would just make me sick, and I'd say, I got to go. You know, I'd get up and leave. And then I just wouldn't come back to the meetings anymore. But nobody ever called me to see where I was. And I was really disappointed. But they were probably praying for me. They probably just didn't call. I don't know. But anyway, so I had to come to believe that there was a power greater than me. And, you know, in the portion of the big book that we read at the meetings, you know, it says no human power could have relieved me of my alcoholism. And I believe that 100%. You know, this question here, do I now believe or am I willing to believe that there's a power greater than myself? That's a yes or no answer. And I'm big on yes and no answers. You know, I don't want all this explanation of why. It's either yes or no. But when I was asked that question, I said, well, it depends. But I finally, like I said, the turning point for me was when, and I don't want to discredit the word believe, because I have to believe in a power greater than myself. But for me, I have to have faith in that power. And I have to take the action, because, you know, faith without works is dead. And it wasn't until I did any of that that it made any difference, because I had always believed in God. I kind of relate that to self-knowledge without any action. And, you know, when I have the faith, that's taking action, because I'm turning my life over to God and walking the walk and letting Him take care of the results. You know, I take the action, He takes care of the results. So, to me, you know, belief without faith for me is absent something. Believing is, like I said, to me, just self-knowledge. But the part that I had to come to believe was that there was a power greater than Danny that was, you know, in control of this planet, and I was not. So that's all I got on that. Thanks.
Thanks, Danny. All right, we're going to pick up on page 52 in the middle of the famous bedevilments. It's been pointed out to me this is like restless, irritable discontent on steroids here. Untreated alcoholism defined. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution to these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. Right?
Yeah, the bedevilments. I love these suckers. This is kind of, in a way, more the what drove me to AA than the alcohol, to be quite frank with you. I've struggled with these things on and off all my life, and booze was a great escape from that, and it worked really well for a long time. But eventually, it started to cause all these problems also. You know, if I could have drank and not had problems with my personal relationships, not had misery and depression, if I could have showed up at work on time every day and gotten paid and just had like this happy, useful life and drank, I definitely would have chosen that. But unfortunately, try as hard as I might, I found that I could not drink and have all of those things. It just didn't seem to work for me. But what I found really weird is that when I did get those 4 months of sobriety and I put the drink down, those things didn't go away. You know what I mean? It's like over time, like the pressure would build. I remember, you know, during that time, if you stop drinking, life tends to get better, you know. People say it, and it's true. You know, I had the husband had come back and I had gotten a job and I was attempting to enroll in school. You know, I should be doing good, and like trying to fill out a freaking application for college was like an overwhelming, complex process. You know, I just couldn't figure out how to do this. It's asking me very basic information, like for, you know, like name, address, and things like that. And I'm like thinking about, oh crap, what classes am I going to take? How's it going to fit in my schedule? I'm not going to be able to finish in the 2 years that I want to, and I can't even fill out a freaking application. You know? And I remember there was times like I got 5 days sober. My husband had taken a week off of work, and I'm not drinking because I'm supervised. At the end of that 5 days, we're like driving out to the park to do something very, very nice. We're gonna go on a nature walk. I really like nature walks, you know. But we're driving over there, and he's just like bopping along, minding his own business, like do 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 do. And I want to kill this guy. You know, he wasn't doing anything. It was just the fact that he existed and was near me. You know, And I had a lot of fear. I don't know. That's just what happens to me. It still pops up on me. The other day I was at 7-Eleven. Or not 7-Eleven. I was at some convenience store, and this guy comes up to me, and he's like saying, "Hey, how are you doing?" And all I'm thinking is, like, why are you talking to me? And so I, like, give him the nod and smile so that he will hopefully go away. And then he proceeds to talk to me more, and all I'm thinking is, like, why are you talking to me? Do I look like I want somebody to talk to me? I mean, that's what it looks like when I'm sober, but more so is the fear. The fear is always what's gotten me. I had bullies as a kid, and I became very introverted. I became very afraid of people, and I actually have problems talking with folks. You know, I don't know what it is. I, like, have all these things. I remember driving to meetings, like, with all these things that I wanted to say, like, questions I had, and I would get to that meeting, and I would have to talk to people, and I just couldn't do it. You know, the conversations with me were very brief, unless you were a very good conversationalist, you know, like, beyond, like, hi, how are you, and what's the weather doing? I just don't know how to do it, you know. And there were times when I remember sitting on my couch one day, you know, minding my own business, playing on my computer, and there's, like, a knot in my stomach, you know. And I used to get heart palpitations that would last for weeks. My heart would just pound for weeks, and I had absolutely no idea why. I'm sober. All these problems should be behind me, and they're not. And certainly, the solution to those problems were much more important than any lunar flight, or in this day and age. I don't care. There could have been a tsunami. There's been some really tragic stuff when I got sober, but I really don't care about that. What I really wanted to know is, like, how do I make this stop? Because the reality is for me, life was intolerable whether I was drinking or whether I was sober, and I had absolutely no idea how to fix any of it. And I can't remember. Do we read the part when we saw? Yeah, when we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance. I have to see it to believe it. I am cynical. I am skeptical. I want proof, and I watch people. You can't just tell me. I look at what you're doing behind the scenes, you know. If I see you falling on your face, I'm not going to listen to you. I'm not. I'm that kind of gal. So I really have to see this stuff at work in somebody's life before I'm going to waste any of my time, you know. And so that idea is huge for me. I think we do need to see it. It's not enough to give me lip service. Sometimes people try to. It just doesn't go well. But that's another story. And just like it says, our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. And that's all I've ever had about this, is a God idea. Even to this day, I can't tell you what I believe. You know, something. That is as far, in 3.5 years of sobriety, something is as far as I've gotten. And the crazy thing is that since I've come to believe in this God idea, a lot of this stuff, it doesn't plague me the way it used to. Before, I would just get consumed with these things, and I had absolutely no idea how to get out of it. Suicide has always been something I've struggled with on and off, and that's, like, where my mind goes. But today, these things don't drag me down. I can have a conversation with people. I can sit up in front of you guys and talk. Like, that is absolutely mind-blowing to me. I had some people that knew me when I first got sober, and they're like, "Oh my God, Ryan, you know, I was known as the girl who came into AA and put her head down on the table. You know, that's what I was like." And I think that's, so this stuff changed not only the drinking, but all that other crap I didn't know how to deal with. I'm very sorry.
You know, I always relied on self to get self out of self, and it just never worked. And, you know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I was read and was taught about God reliance versus self reliance. There's a part in the big book that talks about why we have all these fears, isn't it? Because self reliance failed us. And then it goes on to read that. When we have God reliance, God enables us to match calamity with serenity. And I have found that to be so true. And, you know, I don't understand any of this until I do it. You know, I remember I'd sit there and read the stuff, so I said, what does that got to do with anything? How would that work? You know, that's impossible. And but when I did it, and sometimes right when I did it, I didn't understand what was going on, but it was afterwards I would say, oh, okay. And but until I do any of this stuff, I don't understand it. And so, you know, this is part of the big book that says, you know, we can't transmit something we haven't gotten. So if I haven't done it, I really can't transmit it to you. I mean, I know Bill and Bob are going around 5 days sober helping people get sober. I mean, there's, you know, if God's present, I can do anything. But, you know, the reality of that is I believe I had to had experienced it so I can share it with you. And I'm big on God reliance. Not that I always stay there. Danny comes back in the picture because I still, you know, up here in my mind think I have some power that I can control this. And step aside, God, I got this one. And, you know, maybe not that nonchalantly, but that's what I'm really doing. And step aside, God, I got this one. And then I find myself in trouble. But today I realize that. Before I thought that was normal for me to feel all the anxiety and the hatred that I had because you weren't behaving the way I wanted you to. Today I realize Danny's in charge again. The monster's back, you know. Now let's turn to God and, you know, rely on God. But, you know, I had to, you know, I mentioned that I've experienced this. I'll just give you an example. It's been a few years ago. I was on this job from painter in the butt job, put it that way. And none of the subcontractors were acting right. They weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing. And this was legitimate. It wasn't because they weren't doing it my way. It was just they weren't doing it. And the job was already behind schedule. We were being charged liquidated damages. And so I'm out there trying to, you know, crack the whip and get it done, get out of there. And so I'm relying on myself to fix all this. And people are messing up, and I'm getting so angry with them, they'll say, well, fine, I'll just leave them. Now I'm really in a fix because, you know, it would have been better if they stayed there and doing it a little bit wrong than for nothing to get done. So, I read a lot of other spiritual literature, and it just so happened I was reading something that morning about God reliance. And, you know, I said, well, you know, why don't I give that a shot? And so that's what I did. Instead of criticizing, condemning, and complaining, because I'm quick to do that. You know, it takes me a little while to say thank you, but I can criticize, condemn real quick. You know, especially in my field of work. But I found that when I, you know, didn't look at the problem as a problem and said, you know, rather looked at it as there's a solution to this. What can I do to help you make this right and work together with the person? Everything, you know, smoothed out and production picked up and everything worked out fine. And the only thing that had changed was my reliance. The circumstances were the same. The same people were there. The same job that sucked was there. Nothing had changed except my reliance. I was no longer relying on Danny to fix the problem. I was relying for God to show me and help me to do these things. You know, because I don't have the power. I heard this speaker one time at the Oceanfront Conference say something. It didn't make any sense right away, but I understood it later. He was talking about the power of God and what power I have, which is none. But he said, I'm the pipe, not the well. The power flows through me, not from me. So, you know, if I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing and doing God's will to the best of my ability, and doing the right thing, I'm taking the actions, the simple actions, and God's providing the results, the proper results. It may not be always what I want, but it's what I need. And I'm going to say one more thing, and I forgot what it was. Maybe I'll think of it in a little bit. Thanks.
Thank you, Danny. Mm-hmm. All right, we are unfortunately out of time. This is a great meeting. Let's let Mr. Wilson have the last word here. From the Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience, can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. So I'm going to pass the basket. In accordance with the seventh tradition, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? Yes, sir. Hey, Joe. Tomorrow night, 5:30, potluck, Christ in St. Luke's. Leanne?
My name's Leanne, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Leanne.
The church member at Centenary United Methodist Church on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock has a birthday and a speaker coming down from Pennsylvania. It's at 8 o'clock this Wednesday.
Wednesday, church member? 8 o'clock. Anybody else? This home group, Simple Actions Group, is excited to announce this conference that we're putting on. Bob D. from Las Vegas is going to come. It's actually not going to be here. It's going to be at Ghent United Methodist Church. Friday night, we're going to have Bob D. an open speaker meeting. And then all day Saturday, we're going to have workshops on many different topics, problem, solution, sponsorship, AA singleness of purpose. There'll be a potluck lunch. But there are flyers on that table, and we'd appreciate it if you'd help us talk it up. It's absolutely, completely, totally free. Okay? Any other announcements? There's literature available over there. Books are free. Books aren't free. If you can fold it, it's free. But if you can fold a book, I don't want to. You can have it. That's what I was. Yeah. Okay. Is there anyone in the room tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd just like to welcome you by first name. Anybody?
Hi, I'm Ryan.
Ryan, welcome.
I'm Charlotte. I'm alcoholic.
Hi, Charlotte. Welcome. Anybody else? First 30 days?
Willis.
Hey, Willis. Welcome. All right. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor please raise their hand? All right. And in closing, I'd like to thank all who participated. Danny, thank you very much. Ryan. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which is going to be held at that Mexican place on 22nd and Colonia, Plaza Azteca. 22nd
Plaza del Sol.
Plaza del Sol, if you can fold it. 22nd and Colonial. Listen, we all hate that place, but we're going there anyway, so we don't want to hear any more about it. Is anyone inspired to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Mary Jo.
I am Mary Jo, an alcoholic.
Mary Jo.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you all. Let's close.